So, background, my name is Bryce Blankenagel. I do a podcast about Mormon history in a way that makes it in a chronological and accessible format called Naked Mormonism, and that is the extent of my credentials in Mormon history. So, I want to share what I've recently been researching, actually, and it is on one specific character within Mormon history, and it is somebody who largely... It feels like he's gone unnoticed or is only lived in the background, and this is a person named Frederick G. Williams. Anybody familiar with the name Frederick G. Williams? He received a number of revelations. He was a Kirtland resident long before Joseph Smith ever came along and Sidney Rigdon was baptized. But do you guys know much about Frederick G. Williams other than a couple of revelations that were given to him, calling him on a mission and kind of... Very obscure, isn't he? His great-great-grandson, by the name of Frederick G. Williams, an emeritus professor at BYU, wrote a biography of Frederick G. Williams and the entire Williams family. I believe it was published back in 2010, but it was the medical practice of Dr. Frederick G. Williams, from whence most of this information is coming. And it is very comprehensive, very methodical, and he goes through every single aspect of every piece of documentation that we have of Frederick G. Williams. Is this your presentation? No? No? I just stood up because there was an open microphone. I hope that's all right. So what is interesting about Frederick G. Williams, he was born 1787, and his wife was 11 years his junior. He ended up having four children, two sons and two daughters, and he was a resident, as I said, of Kirtland, Ohio. He was a Rigdonite before Joseph Smith came across. And what is really fascinating about him is at the age of about 16 years old, his elder sister passed away. And he vowed from that time forward to become a physician. And he took up what was the newest and greatest field of physicianship within the era of the Western Ohio Reserve, and that was Thompsonian medicine. Is anybody here familiar with Thompsonian root and herb doctoring? Yeah, or even if you just bought the book that came, $20, you got the book and it came with the degree in it and you filled it out yourself. So, Thompsonian, Thompsonian. I believe it was published initially in 1823, something about that. It ran counter to the narrative of medicine as it currently stood. Now, if we consider physicians today, you know, you go to medical school, you go to, you know, your postdoctorate, college, you go to a ton of education to become a doctor. 11 years, yes. Thank you for your service to humanity. Back then, it was $20, right? And the entire world of medicine was largely driven by people who would go out into the forest and forage herbs and roots and whatever and cook them down into teas and into liquor and into whatever vehicle, into oils, and then give them to their children because that was how medicine was conducted. Then you had roaming physicians who would travel around with a medicine bag and they would carry about all of their wares and their medicines. Laudanum was a staple, and laudanum, of course, is basically just, there are many recipes, but it was basically just alcohol and opium. It was before heroin was a thing, but it was, I mean, it came over on the Mayflower, so a lot of artists credit their creative talent to laudanum itself. I think it was Edgar Allan Poe's. Coleridge. Confession. That was 1826, was that? Confessions of an Opium Eater. Yep. Laudanum had a huge impact on temperance, on medicine. But by and large, medicine was, if somebody had an ailment, a person who was a roaming physician had in their toolbox a set pharmacology of medicines that they would administer, usually through alcohol or through oil, and they would hopefully cure. They had Thompsonian medicine, of course, centered around the idea that creating fever in your body was a way of getting rid of the sickness, which, you know, in a way, that's somewhat accurate. It's your body's autoimmune system reacting to it. However, it was a system that was created to increase the body's temperature and in order to balance out your humors and whatnot. And a lot of the medicines were incorporated. Lobelia was a common herb at the time. And Thompson medicine had this six-step process where you would basically diagnose somebody and then you would administer in various forms these various cures that were root and herb-based. And then if the person began having their fever, that means that the sickness was working its way out of their system. This was an improvement on the status quo of physicians, which bleeding was a common thing at the time. You know, 1799, George Washington famously was bled to death. So, you know, instead of cutting people open to bleed them when they need that blood for their body to cure them, administering roots and herbs found a significant amount more success, as you can understand. Well, that is the train that Frederick G. Williams jumped on, was Thompsonian medicine. Now, what is interesting is Frederick G. Williams became the fifth wheel to the first mission troop out to the Native Americans. Now, if we recall correctly, we have William Lyons Phelps, Oliver Cowdery.
Phelps wasn't on it.
No, not Phelps.
So you've got Parley P. Pratt.
Parley P. Pratt, Oliver Cowdery,
Cyber Peterson,
and Peter Whitmer. And then they traveled to Kirtland, and that's when they converted Sidney Rigdon, and they converted a number of the Rigdonites, a small number of them. Of course, at that time, that's when Sidney Rigdon and Edward Partridge traveled up to New York to go meet Joseph Smith, this young prophet. And Frederick G. Williams converted at that time and said, I'm going to join them and go out and visit with the Lamanites. So 1830, the very first mission troop, October, they get out to Missouri. It could have been November that they actually arrived. And immediately they begin proselyting to the Native Americans. Now, for somebody who is a root and an herb doctor like Frederick G. Williams, who is highly steeped in these, even in Mormonism Unveiled, Eber D. Howe was sure to point out that Frederick G. Williams has an herbarium on either side of his house. He owned some like 160 acres or so in Kirtland. The Kirtland Temple itself is built on Lot 29 and 30 of Frederick G. Williams' property, which he deeded over to Joseph Smith. The deed became disputed afterwards. It's very, very confusing, but a lot of Mormon land deeds were highly disputed. So Frederick G. Williams, you can understand that somebody who is a Thompsonian herb doctor having the opportunity to go out and visit with the Native Americans and possibly intermingle root and herb medicine with the people who had been living here for thousands of years before him, that was a fantastic possibility, right? A great opportunity. So he jumped on this train. Now, famously, the Mormons preaching to the natives, there was a language barrier. They had almost no success. They attended some prayer meetings, likely imbibed in the peyote ceremonies that were there. And then William Clark, General William Clark of the famous Lewis and Clark trip, issued a... well, thanks to this guy, Cummins, I believe was his name, Cummins or Cummings, he kicked the Mormons out because you needed a license to go proselyte to the Native Americans. So the Mormons, as well as this guy, Cummins, they both wrote letters to General William Clark, who was head of the Indian Affairs in Missouri. And William Clark never responded to the Mormons, but essentially they could no longer proselyte to the natives. So they set up camp in Independence. Oliver Cowdery and Peter Whitmer got jobs as tailors and doing other odd jobs in order to fund the mission trip. And then Joseph got his revelation, sending out a ton of members from the New York area out to Missouri, and thus building Zion started to become a thing. Joseph, less than a year later, in July 1831, I believe it was, that's when he made his trip out to Missouri to meet with the Native Americans that were out there, to meet with the missionaries who had set up posts there, dedicate the plot of Zion, and dedicate and lay the cornerstone for the temple that was unearthed by the Temple Lot Mormons in the 1870s, 80s, something like that. So that is all due to Frederick G. Williams and these other missionaries who are fraternizing with the Native Americans out there. Now, it is interesting to note that Frederick G. Williams spent a fair amount of time in Independence, but he was an established doctor. He was an established physician, even if he didn't have any, you know, credentials that we would consider legitimate today. He was a physician in Kirtland, and he had a lot of patients. So he was on this mission out in Independence, Missouri, and he constantly had people who were waiting on him to get back to Kirtland so that he could administer medicine. So eventually he made his way back, and he at some point, this actually comes later in the Missouri years, when he gets back into Kirtland, he begins picking up his medicine business again. And at this time, Rebecca Williams, which is really important, Rebecca was not only raising the four children, their eldest son, who was 14 years old at the time, it says that he was an invalid. He was somehow disabled. Yeah, somehow crippled, as they would call him. Rebecca Williams at this time was not only taking care of the children, running a farm of hundreds of acres, or more than 100 acres, but she was also administering medicine. She was also working because she had been sharing knowledge with her husband, Frederick G. Williams, and she was working as the substitute physician, the herb doctor, while Frederick G. Williams was out with the Mormons. So finally, he comes back. And there is a revelation delivered that all of the Mormons are to dedicate, consecrate their property to the, I'm trying to find it in my notes here, dedicate their property to the church. And at this time, Joseph saw that it was a good idea to have his father, who was quite well-versed in root and herb manipulation, with his ginseng business deal, with the molasses that the Mormons were harvesting, with the cake and beer shop that they had. Joseph Smith Sr. was at least somewhat versed in being a farmer. Joseph had a revelation that basically deeded control of Frederick G. Williams' property to Joseph Smith Sr., and that is how Joseph Smith Sr. made a bit of his money, was by running Frederick G. Williams' farm while he was out of town. So until Frederick G. Williams came back in, I believe it was 1832, Joseph Smith Sr. was the owner of his property. And at a later time, of course, Joseph, the revelation came down that all of the Mormons were to deed their property, which Frederick G. Williams did. We don't know if it was willingly or not. Unfortunately, for somebody who was an incredibly prolific writer, who was a scribe for Joseph Smith for 7 years, who was a justice of the peace for 6 years, he was a justice of the peace in Kirtland. He was the first elected Mormon, or first Mormon to ever reach an elected position. He was constantly writing. He has all of his medical ledger books, which are extensively recounted by his great-great-grandson in this biography, The Medical Practice of Frederick G. Williams. He apparently never kept a journal, or if he did keep a journal, it's been lost to antiquity, or it's in somebody's trunk in their attic, and they don't know what treasure trove they have up there. So we don't know much about what Frederick G. Williams thought about what was going on. He just seemed to be a stalwart member of the church. I will quickly read... there was some interesting parts of the Thompsonian medicine, and in Frederick G. Williams' ledger books, he recounts the names of the people and their bill. Unfortunately, he oftentimes does not recount what they needed, what medicine he administered in order to cure them, whatever ailment they had. Apparently, it was some kind of doctor-patient confidentiality at the time, but what... explicit tag. One thing that he did record frequently was known as Bachelor's Delight as part of the Thompsonian medicine, which involved a mixture of lobelia, which was a mainstay of the Thompsonian medicine, a mixture of that into some kind of oil or tincture and putting it into a syringe and shooting it up one's genitals to cure venereal disease. Needless to say, Frederick G. Williams has multiple entries in his ledger book of giving cures to men for Bachelor's Delight. Dr. Phylacis Hurlbut is one of those people who received the Bachelor's Delight. Burr Riggs, who ended up becoming his son, Frederick G. Williams' son-in-law. And Burr Riggs is known for being the very wacky early Mormon who would smash his head against a wall to knock himself out and then get back up and have spiritual manifestations. And it was the power of God working on him, people. Burr Riggs became Frederick G. Williams' son-in-law, married his daughter Levina Williams, and later became a co-partner in Dr. Williams' medical practice in Quincy and Nauvoo, Illinois. Burr Riggs received the Bachelor's Delight as well. Very, very interesting. Now, it is interesting as well, in the Thompsonian medicine, it did track that there was the transmission of venereal disease and how it was transmitted, along with the cure that was called Bachelor's Delight. So really, in some ways, Thompsonian medicine was a little bit ahead of its time, or it was seen as a fringe by the large mainstay of medical practices, but it was still ahead of its time in some ways that it did track that venereal diseases were transmitted through sexual intercourse, which was something that was a bit of a mystery to a lot of people. Now, here we go. I'm going to get past the Bachelor's Delight. I thought that was interesting. It also did include cures for female problems. Now, this is, they called it Mother's Relief. And Mother's Relief was this childbearing medicine, and what it would do is it was similar in the 1950s to the dream sleep, where it would basically knock the women out during child labor, and they would just become conscious for their contractions, and then they would go back to sleep. Unfortunately, dream sleep in the 1950s, when it was first introduced, the women would come out of the labor room with abraded wrists and ankles, because they may not have remembered what was going on, but their body was still experiencing the pain, and they needed to be lashed to the bed because they were lashing out at the doctors. Well, similarly, there was the childbearing medicine, this Mother's Relief, as part of the Thompsonian medical practice, that would, in between contractions, knock the women out, which, you have to understand, in a day before epidurals, that was probably very preferable. There was also this, now this is a quote out of the Thompsonian medical family botanical is what the mainstay one was, and I believe that was published 1828. And this was a rare example where there was medicine that was crafted specifically just for women. And it said in the treating hysterical women, it said to prevent sore nipples or breasts, and another to treat hysteria. And hysterics usually occurred in women over 15 years of age. So, you know, the women, when they're having all of those horrible menstruation syndrome, we got to treat that hysteria. So that's what the Thompsonian medicine of hysterical women was treating as well. So it was really an all-inclusive type of medicine. And I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek here, just to let you guys know. It also, Frederick G. Williams treated Joseph Smith when he was tarred and feathered. He treated Hiram Smith when he was cutting wood for the Kirtland Temple. An axe slipped and he cut his arm open very deep, according to Joseph Smith, down to the bone, apparently. Frederick G. Williams was able to sew him up, get him right back into working condition. It's really incredible to see that Frederick G. Williams was kind of in the background making sure that the Mormons got along. He was their mom who would, they'd come in with skin knees and, oh, let me bandage you up, and he'd send them out playing again. Frederick G. Williams was that old erudite gentleman who always had a magic cure for something. Now, it should be noted as well that once he got into the later Nauvoo years, he did participate in the Kirtland Safety Society. And this created a lot of tensions, obviously, with the collapse of the banking system in the Panic of 1837. Frederick G. Williams was one of the associates of the Kirtland Safety Society. Well, in June of 1837, when Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon stepped down as president and secretaries, Frederick G. Williams took over as president of the Kirtland Safety Society Anti-Banking Company. And there are still enough extant notes that have Frederick G. Williams' signature on them as president of the Kirtland Safety Society. And this was at a time that he was also Justice of the Peace. And as Justice of the Peace, that wasn't a judge. If people aren't familiar with Justice of the Peace, it is somebody who is just known to be a moral, upright, standing citizen who is supposed to deliberate on small, petty lawsuits that are under $20 or administer fines or whatever the case may be. Just, you know, a peacekeeping officer, basically. So that's what Frederick G. Williams was doing. And he heard in his 15 months as a Justice of the Peace, he heard almost 1,600 cases that unfortunately are not included in his docket book because his docket book has been lost to history, unfortunately. Now we move on to the Mormon exodus from Kirtland, where Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, Sidney Rigdon were excommunicated by the Kirtland Saints and were forced to move out to Missouri. And they get into Missouri, and Frederick G. Williams immediately moves in with his daughter and son-in-law. And Burr Riggs at this time was apostatized from the church, but Levina still believed in the church, and she was still a member, a faithful attending, but Burr Riggs had his issues with Joseph Smith. So Frederick G. Williams and Rebecca Williams and their remaining two sons and one daughter, they moved in with Burr Riggs and Levina Williams and lived in Missouri there for the entirety of the 1838 year. And then at this time, Frederick G. Williams was also dealing with the Algernon Sidney Gilbert estate. Now, if people know Algernon Sidney Gilbert, does that name ring a bell for anyone? Nodding heads? A couple people? So Algernon Sidney Gilbert and Newell K. Whitney were business partners in Kirtland. When Joseph gave the revelation that people need to dedicate or consecrate their property to the church, he named Newell K. Whitney as director of the Bishop's Storehouse in Kirtland, and that was the Newell K. Whitney and Company store. He designated Algernon Sidney Gilbert to be the director of the Bishop's Storehouse in Missouri and go set up a mercantile shop there. Well, when Zion's Camp, after the Mormons were chased out of Jackson County and Zion's Camp made their way to Missouri, that is when Algernon Sidney Gilbert caught cholera from Zion's Camp, and he unfortunately passed away. Frederick G. Williams was named his probate officer and took care of his estate. So all through from mid-1834 all the way until May of 1839, that's how long it took for Frederick G. Williams to sort out Algernon Sidney Gilbert's affairs. All the while, the Mormon-Missouri War is going on, the Hans Mill Massacre happened, the Mormon depredations are being committed, the Battle of Crooked River, the Gallatin Day election, Sidney Rigdon's July 4th oration, obviously the mess that is Missouri-Mormon War. Frederick G. Williams all this time was being the probate officer for Algernon Sidney Gilbert, while at the same time being the doctor, the primary doctor for the Mormons. So Joseph Smith was taken. Joseph Smith, Hiram Smith, Sidney Rigdon, three others were taken to Liberty Jail as a result of them surrendering by the Missouri militia that surrounded Far West and Adamondayaman. Frederick G. Williams was one of the few people who actually visited Joseph Smith in Liberty Jail in March of 1839. Of course, Joseph Smith and the rest of the gentlemen were able to escape custody as they were being transferred to Boone County in April of 1839. You're interacting the most with me, so I'm trying to check my facts with you by making eye contact.
Within a year, that's all that matters.
Within a year, okay, so it's close enough, right?
Forget the month and the days.
Okay, the years that really matter.
66.
anything else is just gravy. Okay, so at that point, Frederick G. Williams, finally in May of 1839, Joseph had escaped custody and was headed to Quincy. That's when Frederick G. Williams and the rest of the Williams family were finally able to leave Missouri with the last contingency of the Saints that were moving to Quincy, Illinois, and up to Commerce. It wasn't Nauvoo at the time. It was still Commerce. So at that time, that's when Dr. Frederick G. Williams began living in Quincy, Illinois, and he reestablished his medical practice there. And this is going to take me a moment to find, I apologize for this, but he published an advertisement that is quite fascinating in the Quincy Whig, you know, that said, hey, I'm a practicing doctor. Everything that you saw for me in Kirtland in Missouri, you're going to be getting the same exact treatment here now that we are in Nauvoo, Quincy, or Commerce, wherever the case may be. My apologies. I feel like I need to fill the silence by talking, but that makes my searching less effective. So, and just to let everybody know, this book, I said it's extremely comprehensive. It gives you a sense for what happens when emeritus professors are tasked with writing a historiography and they don't have to worry about word counts. It is very repetitive and very verbose. Let's just say Frederick G. Williams, the current living professor, he's 86, nice. I believe. I spoke with him on the phone asking, I wanted to know if he had any, currently waiting. What turned me on to Frederick G. Williams in the first place is currently awaiting scanning into the BYU Harold B. Lee archives are 8 folders or 8 boxes of documents of Frederick G. Williams. And when I spoke to the archivist there, he had no idea about it. So he actually got me in touch with Frederick G. Williams, the current descendant as the emeritus professor right now. And I asked him about it, what is this that's waiting to be cataloged? And he said, oh, that's all my work. It's not from my great-great-grandpa. I was hoping that it was 8 boxes of the original Frederick G. Williams, because that would be, who knows what would be hidden in there, what great treasure trove to find, but no, it's his work.
Maybe you can answer this question.
Yeah.
So the original Doctrine and Covenants, Section 82,
yes.
The name Frederick G. Williams as a member of the First Presidency was originally given to Jesse Gauss.
Yes. So Jesse Gauss apostatized, Frederick G. Williams popped right in his spot. For such an incredibly comprehensive and verbose book, he spent all of about 3 paragraphs on Jesse Gauss. Because we don't know, right? Yeah. And also something I missed in there, to exhibit how closely related Joseph Smith, or how close the relationship between Joseph and Frederick G. Williams were, Joseph's son, born in 1836, Joseph's second actually son that survived into maturity, was Frederick Granger Williams Smith. So obviously they had a deep relationship with each other. If Joseph named his own, you know, son after Joseph Smith III, after
and
Frederick G. Williams.
The first vision account of 1831-1832 was originally thought to be in Frederick G. Williams' handwriting.
Most of it is, yeah.
Yes.
The
history is that the actual vision relationship is in Joseph Smith Jr.'s handwriting.
Yeah. And that was at the time when Oliver Cowdery was released as being Joseph Smith's scribe so that he could work with David Whitmer, with the Whitmers and Phelps in Missouri to run the Missouri stake of the church. And that's when Frederick G. Williams became Joseph's second official scribe. You have a question?
What was the name of the Gauss person?
Jesse Gauss?
G-A-U-S-E. Jesse Gauss.
Yes. Yep. It's a hard, Gauss is kind of an interesting name. So I found this 1839 advertisement in the Quincy Whig. It's a little bit lengthy, but it's really fun. So just give me a minute. I should also point out that Frederick Williams, German, he's a German descendant, probably second generation German descendant. So we have printed 1839, F.G. Williams, Indian and German root doctor, who distinguishes disease by an examination of the urine. Office on Hampshire Street, opposite the American Tavern, Dr. Williams would notify the citizens of this county and the public at large that he has located himself in the town of Quincy, Illinois, and is now prepared to attend all who may favor him with their patronage by practicing the Indian and German system of distinguishing disease by an examination of the urine. And that he will always apply vegetable medicine, Thomsonian vegetable medicine, it was the family botanic vegetable medicine, which are perfectly free from all those deleterious effects which are always the result from the use of mineral medicines. Now, obviously, it should be understood that a lot of root medicines have a lot of profound side effects, not least of which is death. Death is a big one. If you know how to manipulate it properly, powerful hallucinations, Really crazy experiences, some of which we do see in the Kirtland Temple dedication ceremony, but that is a whole other aspect of my research that I presented on previously.
Is there any evidence that he was giving Joseph Smith materials for, you know, the entheogens that create the hallucinations?
You ask a good question.
He
is the perfect source for having given any of these entheogens to Joseph Smith. What I will say to that is, unfortunately, in this book, it details everything from Frederick G. Williams' ledger books, but the majority of those only include the patient and their balance. There's only a few instances where it lists what their ailment was or what their cure was. Joseph Smith had the second highest bill with Frederick G. Williams, whereas most people ever saw Frederick G. Williams 2, 3, 4 times. Hiram Smith saw him 7 times. Joseph Smith has 35 separate entries of debts that he owes to Frederick G. Williams. None of the cures or none of the medicines are listed, so we don't know what they are. But Frederick G. Williams obviously would have been extremely familiar with these plants and herbs that could cause entheogenic experiences. And Joseph Smith in his Illinois ledger was listed as a bankrupt, one among over 50 people in Illinois that were listed as bankrupts. He had an outstanding balance of $59 at the time that Frederick G. Williams died in 1842. That was one of the highest outstanding balances. So needless to say, Joseph Smith was one of his greatest patrons. Continuing on, the deleterious effects, as are always the result from the use of mineral medicines, Dr. W's medicines are procured from the field and the forest, carefully selected and prepared in such a manner that he can recommend them to the afflicted to operate in harmony with all the laws of animal life, removing disease by restoring all the exocrations and secretions of the system, dislodging all the worn-out matter which, by its being retained in the system, produces disease and death. His medicines are peculiarly calculated for the cure of liver complaints. Now, this is where it sounds like a miracle cure, right? Liver complaints, dyspepsia, fever, fever and ague, affection of the lungs and kidneys, weakness of the stomach, loss of appetite, indigestion, costiveness, nervous affections, coughs and colds, rheumatism, impurities of the blood, fever sores, ulcers, white swellings, cancers, general female debility, and the whole train of diseases that affect the human frame. He continues. He will warrant a perfect cure in all cases of cancers, white swelling, fever sores, ulcers, and scrofula in all their various forms, together with every old sore of any kind whatever. His charges will always be moderate, and the terms for the medicine cash or good notes with approved security. In all inward complaints, patients are requested to bring or send some of their urine in a clear vial, taken immediately after rising in the morning. Now, this is really curious because I don't understand how this works. And I know that through modern spectroscopy, scientists use urine analysis in order to understand what people's... We have a doctor here. Doctors do use people's urine samples in order to diagnose them or to see what their blood levels or nutrition levels are. I don't know. He didn't have a spectrometer.
Taste it,
sniff it, look at the color. That's all I can think of. Right?
Diabetes,
right? I don't know what else could be diagnosed from the urine, but the ad concludes by saying, all you have to do is send your vial of urine, and he will send you the plants and herbs and tinctures that you need to your home. You don't even have to show up. He was a mail-order doctor. How great is that? If only we could have a system like that today. You're buying from China. There were a number of advertisements that went out in the Quincy Whig. I think there were 3 of them. This was reprinted 3 times in the Quincy Whig. Then he moved up to Commerce. This was before it was Nauvoo. And if you know Commerce, when it was purchased from Galland and White, there was basically one house on it that was there. There were like 3 buildings there when the Mormons moved there. The largest house was a 2-story white house. I believe it was wood, not brick. That's where Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon initially lived when they moved out to Commerce. When Joseph Joseph moved out, the Smith family moved out, Frederick G. Williams set up his shop in that home in Commerce as the Mormons were living in lean-tos and shacks and just starting to build Commerce from the ground up before it was designated as Nauvoo. So Frederick G. Williams was, he had the first doctor's shop in Nauvoo, basically. And that's where people could go. He was not a roaming physician. It printed explicitly in all of his ads in Kirtland and in Quincy. It says that he does not call on you. He does not go to your house. You come to him. Or he'll send it to you by somebody, by a carrier. Now, it is interesting because near the end of his life, he died at the age of 55 in 1842. I believe it was September of 1842 is when he finally passed away. Unfortunately, he was 55. Yep, so he was waning in health pretty quickly. He went to visit Joseph Smith in Nauvoo a couple weeks before he died, and they held a loving embrace. Joseph gave him a blessing and said that this is the last time I'll see you, and they said goodbye. But prior to that, Burr Riggs, his son-in-law, actually teamed up with Frederick G. Williams to – has anybody seen Breaking Bad? Breaking Bad, anybody fans? Okay, so Frederick G. Williams became the Walter White. Burr Riggs was the Jesse Pinkman. Burr Riggs was running all of the drugs all around town. And when I say drugs, he's an herb doctor. These are drugs. Burr Riggs was running them around. He was carting them around while Frederick G. Williams was staying in his house and tending to the plants, mixing up the tinctures. And then that was his mainstay of income until he passed away. Now, I really want to point this out. So at the time that Frederick G. Williams Frederick G. Williams was obviously extremely devoted to Joseph Smith and the Mormon cause. And what we can use to substantiate that, because we don't have any of his personal writings, for as much time as he spent writing as Joseph Scribe, as a justice of the peace, as a doctor in his medical ledgers, we don't have any of his own writings except for a letter, basically, to his wife. Joseph Smith commanded that all of the property be consecrated to the church. By that time, when that revelation was given, Joseph Smith had run up a bill of Frederick G. Williams for $4,600. $4,613 in total. And Frederick G. Williams just forgave it. He just ignored it. In the revelation commanding the saints to consecrate their property and establishing the United Firm, the United Order, Joseph said that all of the debts shall be forgiven, and Frederick G. Williams complied and said, okay. Also at the time, he donated his more than 160 acres in Kirtland. He donated that to the church as well. That was valued over $5,000. So somebody, Frederick G. Williams, who was a wealthy and extremely successful doctor, when he teamed up with Joseph Smith, I have no other way of saying this, but Joe sucked the well dry and caused Frederick G. Williams to become a refugee, a poor religious refugee along with the rest of the Mormons, while Joseph was continuing to run the Mormon bill up in the tens of thousands of dollars with the construction of the temple, with everything else that was going on. Frederick G. Williams was extremely devout. In 1835, Joseph Smith Sr. gave patriarchal blessings to both Frederick and Rebecca Williams. And in that patriarchal blessing, Joseph Smith Sr. told them that if they would continue to be faithful and sin no more, that their invalid son would be healed. And he was never healed. He died at the age of 19, still is an invalid. And you can't possibly understand what that would have done to Frederick and Rebecca. They were given a revelation from somebody who was the patriarch over the church, somebody who was seen as, you know, in league with the prophets here in Revelator, somebody who has a divine connection. He gives them a revelation that if they are faithful, then their son will be healed, and their son died. So to put that in context, Frederick G. Williams had given well over $9,000 to Joseph Smith in property and in rent and everything else. He allowed Joseph and the Smith family to stay on his property and never charged him for rent. He included it in his ledger books, so he accounted for everything, but then he just wrote it off. Then Frederick G. Williams, counter to this prophecy, as a faithful member, his son unfortunately passed away. Frederick and Rebecca, you can understand, were probably heartbroken, but we don't have any writings from them, or at least they haven't surfaced yet. If they are somewhere, we don't know what that must have done to them. Finally, Frederick G. Williams passed away in late 1842, in fall of 1842, and his son, his remaining living son, who was taking on the mantle of the local doctor. He had probably mentored under his father. He has probably learned the tricks of the trade. He instead dissolved the Frederick G. Williams Company with Burr Riggs, and then he began working with Burr Riggs as a new company under the same name of Frederick G. Williams and Company. And that's when the Ezra G. Williams, that's when he became the Walter White, where he was working on making the medicine and making the drugs in the home in Quincy, Illinois, and Burr Riggs was continuing the delivery process of their business. Unfortunately, Burr Riggs, he was probably consuming too much of the product, and he put himself out of the way with liquor. Ezra G. Williams continued on the work with his mother helping him out. Rebecca Williams at this time was also working with her son Ezra Williams, and they continued running the farm. They continued running their physician practice in Quincy, Illinois. And it should be noted at this time that they had hundreds and hundreds of dollars in outstanding debts that were owed to the Williams family as a product of Frederick G. Williams' medical practice, and the majority of them were never paid up. And if we are able to understand any insight into what kind of dire straits the Williams family were in when Frederick G. Williams died in 1842, the $15 bill for the funeral and casket service never went paid. So somebody who had given more than $9,000 in the prime of his life, at the height of his career, to Joseph Smith and the Mormons, was removed repeatedly from their home because of all of the conflict arising with the Missourians and with the Mormons in Kirtland. He died penniless, and his family barely scraped by. All of his descendants ended up moving out to Utah, and now his great-great-grandson, Frederick G. Williams, is in his 80s and is an emeritus professor at BYU, and we have him to thank for compiling this amazing biography of the medical practice of Frederick G. Williams. I don't know. I should know that. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. That actually sounds familiar. And the legacy of Dr. Frederick G. Williams is closed for now until we can find more documentation. I don't know where we are on time. I can try and field a question or two. What time do we have here? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just stood up and said, is it cool with everybody if I just talk? So here we are. Thank you. All right. Well, thanks for entertaining me, everybody. You have a question? J.D. Williams? At what university? BYU?
University of Utah.
University of Utah. I have no idea. I don't know. He does have a lot of descendants here from Ezra G. Williams. There's quite a few of them living here. They moved to Ogden originally, and they're most of what we know of Frederick G. Williams' biography is from his old ledger books that his descendants took with them across the plains, and they wrote subsequent notes within those. And in on the margins of those medical ledgers. And that's where they wrote reminiscences, family folklore, and those were verified through letter exchanges that we have record of. So, and that came at the turn of the 20th century. I'll give you a card. I do Naked Mormonism podcast.
I'm gonna forget that. Naked Mormonism.
I'm also presenting tomorrow at 10:15 about another podcast idea. So.